All right, so we finished Acts 24 on Sunday. It spent most of our time just talking about the sermon that Paul had delivered to Felix about righteousness, self-control, and judgment to come. And then Felix responds to that message. We then discussed how Felix was hoping to get money from Paul, and so he didn't let Paul leave his house arrest. But rather, it was Felix that was removed from power, and he left Paul bound. So chapter 25 begins on a new scene. There's a new governor that is in town, and he quickly learns of this high-profile prisoner that is in their midst. So in Acts 25, notice verse 1. Now when Festus had come to the province, after 3 days, he went up from Caesarea to Jerusalem. Then the high priest and the chief men of the Jews informed him against Paul, and they petitioned him, asking a favor against him, that he would summon him to Jerusalem, while they lay in ambush along the road to kill him. So Festus is now in control, and he has come to Jerusalem. Some speculate perhaps it was for one of the Jewish festivals to show his face among the people that he would govern and be around during this time period. Very quickly, though, the high priest, chief priest, the men in control, they talk to him about Paul. You know, they might have talked to him about a number of different things, but the thing that the Bible mentions and certainly highlights is they talked to him about Paul. So it could have been the very first thing that they bring up to Festus about. And do they ask for justice to be done about Paul?
They want to kill him.
All right. They don't ask for justice. They ask for a favor, right? Why do you need a favor if you just want justice to be done? It's because they didn't want justice to be done. They didn't know how to get rid of this tricky fella, Paul, in their minds. He was just too slippery. So the only way we're going to do anything against him is we got to ask for a favor. So what was the favor? That's right. Bring him back over here to the hometown crowd. And kind of giving the impression that we want to put him on trial. But the truth of the matter is, they want to kill him, right? I love this about the Bible. You don't fool God. You know, nobody really knew about this except these chief priests and the other Jews in control. But God knew about it. That's right. The Holy Spirit knew about it, who inspired Luke to write about it. So this is kind of like the letter that we mentioned earlier about Festus to Felix. How would Luke have known about that? Well, God knew about it. So God inspires the writer, and they write about these things that are otherwise top secret. This is also a repeat of history, wouldn't you say? It wasn't too long ago that they tried to plan like this earlier, didn't they? Remember that in Acts chapter 23:14, they came to the chief priests and elders and said, "We have bound ourselves under a great oath that we will eat nothing until we have killed Paul." So it is a similar thing. You get him to go from point A to point B, and between A and B, we're going to attack him and we're going to kill him. It's the same plan. Well, it didn't work then, and it's not going to work now either.
Never
learn. Man doesn't learn very well, and that's why we have the phrase "history repeats itself," because we keep trying to do our own thing, our own way, and it just yields the same results. All right.
These guys would have died from starvation before Paul would have died.
That's right. That's right. If they held, yeah. If they held to their vow, yeah. Anybody else? Well, verse 4 says, Festus answered that Paul should be kept at Caesarea and that he himself was going there shortly. So he doesn't decide to acquiesce, you know, as one of the first things he does is being in control, just to give the Jews whatever they want. And so he says, no, we're going to keep Paul in Caesarea. I'll be going back there shortly. Verse 5, therefore he said, let those who have authority among you go down with me and accuse this man to see if there's any fault in him. So here's what we're going to do. He says, you go ahead and send the leading men to accuse him before me, and we'll see if there's any fault in him. This also sounds a little bit like a repeat of history, right? That's what was done there with Lysias to Felix, and said, hey, I've told them, you know, let them come down there and accuse him before you, and then you can render a judgment on it. And so now we have Festus doing pretty much the same thing that had been done before. Verse 6, and when he had remained among them more than 10 days, he went down to Caesarea, and the next day, sitting on the judgment seat, he commanded Paul to be brought. So he hangs out in Jerusalem 10 days, you know, doing whatever it is that they needed to do for the affairs of the province. But as soon as he gets back in town, there's like no delay. It was as if they were right there with him on his coattails, saying, okay, we'll see you in the morning, right? And so the judgment seat is set out, and the Jews are anxious to be able to be before Festus and to bring their accusations against Paul. So he commands Paul to be brought. Verse 7, when he had come, the Jews who had come down from Jerusalem stood about and laid many serious complaints against Paul, which they could not prove. So again, just like history before, it's the same thing. And Luke in Acts 24, Luke expands upon some of their arguments, and we notice how vague they were back here. Verse 5, for we have found this man a plague, a creator of dissension among all the Jews throughout the world, ringleader of the sect of the Nazarenes, even tried to profane the temple. Right? Very vague accusations, just kind of hearsay, just statements. They didn't bring the people that actually saw Paul in the temple with them. And so you see in Acts 25 the same. They laid down serious charges, complaints, which they could not prove. And a court is all about proof. What can you prove? If there's no proof, then we just have an argument. That's all we got.
I see a couple of things. One is we need to live our lives in such a way that if people do accuse us, that it's a false accusation. Or if they accuse us, it's of the truth. Mm-hmm. The way, as they would have said in those days.
Right. Finding a fault concerning his faith. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. That's what they did with Daniel. Remember, they were trying so hard to find something that we could pin him on, and he was just too much of an upright character. So we're going to have to pit him against his faith.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. That's right. So that's the way our accusers work. All the more need for us to lead righteous lives, right? So that we have the greatest amount of impact upon those that we do reach. Lest we shortcut our influence when they see hypocrisy or evil in our life, they say, well, why should I even listen to you about the Bible? You know, you don't even listen to it yourself.
And all it takes is once for us to, as we would say, mess up.
True. It's true. Yeah, the world has a very long memory. That's right. That's right. So here they're trying to figure out a way to pin something on Paul, but they just couldn't. They just couldn't prove it. There's just no case here. So, verse 8, while he answered for himself, now Paul speaks, neither against the law of the Jews, nor against the temple, nor against Caesar, have I offended in anything at all. It's just, he said, it's my word versus their word. And I've not offended in any of these ways at all. So, again, like we've discussed earlier, if that's the case, there is no case. This should be done. Dismissed, right? That's what the judge would say, dismissing the case. I'm dismissing the case. And yet, we see a judge here not executing justice, right? Paul wasn't asking for mercy, just asking for justice to be done. Just do the right thing. Weigh the evidence. If there's no evidence, then we got no proceedings. The Bible again tells us the heart of Festus. No man can know what's in the mind of man except the man tell himself, or unless God knows it, right? And so the Bible tells us his heart, verse 9. Festus wanted to do the Jews a favor, answered Paul and said. So God says, I know exactly your motives. And so whatever Festus does next is going to lean in the favor of the Jews.
Kind of like today's politicians.
Right, sure, yeah. He definitely was a politician. What's going to get him the most points, you know? Let's see. I can make one guy upset, or I can make thousands upset. Well, forget that it's right or wrong. I'm going to try and appease the thousands, right? And you're right, a lot of politicians work this way today. Where's the wind blowing? And I want to secure the vote. Well, I gotta go that way.
That earthly throne is much more valuable than the spiritual throne.
Mm-hmm.
The heavenly home.
That's right. Yeah.
That's what they did to Jesus. Jesus was innocent. Many times did Pilate declare him innocent, but yet gave in to the riot. This is what was true of Festus. Felix was called back to Rome because of the threat of the Jews. And so, in order to do them a favor, he left Paul in prison because their accusers were going with him to Rome. Festus did the same thing. He wanted to please the Jews because he knew he had to work with them. And he was afraid. I mean, the Jews obviously were known as complainers and very determined to have their way until 70 AD when Rome said no more and destroyed them. But they were always trying to push their way with Rome. And obviously was trying to please them and say, knowing that, like you said, it would be in their favor to have Paul over Jerusalem. Paul had already been in Jerusalem. He had not done any justice. Why did you think that you would
apply
justice now?
Right, right.
Which is to please them.
Yes. And Paul would not have known of the assassination plot. He might have been able to figure something out, but he wouldn't have known for sure. But he knew he wouldn't get a fair trial in Jerusalem.
And two, just that, I mean, the likelihood of us facing what Paul faced is, you know, I'm sure pretty low on the totem pole, but it, you know, we do need to be careful with wanting our own way. You know, that's a kind of a side lesson we can learn from the Jews because, you know, when you want your own way long enough, and that's what you give a lot of thought and process to, you know, it can cause a lot of problems.
Right. Anybody else? So the phrase wanted to do the Jews a favor was repeated twice, wasn't it? Once in verse 27 of Acts 24 with Felix, wanted to do the Jews a favor. And now in chapter 25, verse 9, with Festus, wanted to do the Jews a favor. Verbatim, word for word. And so this is very much, you know, like politics. You know, you scratch my back, I'll scratch your back. Let's do favors for each other. Right? What about doing the right thing? Now, if it's to my advantage, right? But if it's not, then we do each other favors. You know? And that's a lot of lobbying that goes on in Washington. I mean, a lot of this stuff, that's what it's all about, these favors that's taking place. And it's sad that you see that back here, and it's in an effort to try and destroy a righteous man.
I was thinking about Jehoshaphat and Ahab, because, you know, Ahab wanted to, he didn't want to talk to a man of God. What was the prophet's name? Because anyway, he said that he would just tell him what, you know, he wouldn't speak to him favorably,
mm-hmm.
what he wanted. And of course, Jehoshaphat wanted to know, is there not anybody else we can talk to? And that's what he said that, so...
Right, Micaiah was the prophet there.
People usually don't want to talk to somebody that's going to tell them the truth.
That's right.
They need to hear.
That's right. It's not as popular.
Hadn't God also told Paul that he would be going to Rome?
Mm-hmm.
And Jerusalem and not.
Yeah. Right, right. I don't go back there. Well, let me just read on further because I stopped at the favor part. It said, he answered Paul and said, are you willing to go up to Jerusalem and there be judged before me concerning these things? Now, I mean, again, you think on the surface of this, I'm being judged before you concerning these things right now. What's going to be different over there? Nothing. Except the crowd. That's exactly the difference. I mean, there's a reason why you hear of people that maybe have been accused of a crime in a certain county and they're taken out of the county or even out of state to then be put on trial because they're afraid they won't get a fair hearing in the local crowd, the local area that they're at. What you see Paul exactly making this point here, you know. That, wait a second, why would I want to go over there? I already know what they all think about me. You know, it's that you are, Festus, what you're asking to do is not right. It's not fair. And as Mother mentioned Jesus earlier, we remember, and Paul would remember, what happened to Jesus, who was the most innocent man who's ever lived, when he was in the home crowd of all those that wanted him dead. Well, the governor eventually gave in. So why would this governor be any different than Pilate, the former governor? He wouldn't be. Well, like Miss Betty mentioned, Paul knew I'm supposed to go to Rome, not back to Jerusalem. So I'm not going to play this game. And because of Paul's background, he actually had a legal way to get out of that. You know what it is? That's right. You all know what it is. Good job. That's right. Because they had certain privileges that nobody else did, such as the ability to appeal to a higher court. And so that's what Paul's going to do. But before he does that, he says in verse 10, Paul said, I stand at Caesar's judgment seat, where I ought to be judged. To the Jews, I have done no wrong, as you very well know. So what Paul's at is it a secular court. It's Caesar's court. He says, I'm to be judged here, you know, as a citizen of this great empire. But in Jerusalem, it's a Sanhedrin court. You know, it's a religious one. And they've got a bias. I'm not to be judged there. I've been sent over here. And he goes on to say, I've done no wrong, as you very well know. I love how he basically looks Festus in the eyes and says, you and I both know the same thing. And that is, I've done nothing wrong. And Festus didn't speak up at that moment and say, wait a second, I haven't made that decision. No, you know. We both know I've done nothing wrong. That's pretty bold to be able to say that to the justice.
Verse 18 and verse 25. Festus
admits
the same thing. Yep. Mm-hmm. But he has done nothing wrong deserving of death. So Paul, like you said, knew and could actually look him in the eye and say, you know, I've done nothing wrong. So for him to go to Jerusalem,
right. In verse 18, when the accusers stood up, they brought no accusation against him of such that I had supposed. So he thought there was some kind of civil violation. There was none. There was nothing. And again, what we just read there in verse 18, Paul didn't know about that. That was a personal conversation between Festus and King Agrippa. But God knew about it, and God knew exactly that Paul was right. You know? Yeah. You know I've done nothing wrong. Nothing wrong. terrible. I mean, it's just terrible to see so much injustice take place. And it's terrible when it takes place today if you've got politicians or if you've got even those in courts today that are sold to whatever it is that the masses desire and want. It's a shame. It's so sad. But I love how Paul calls him out on that. Now he says in verse 11, "For if I am an offender or have committed anything deserving of death, I do not object to dying. But if there's nothing in these things of which these men accuse me, no one can deliver me to them. I appeal to Caesar." I love that. No one can deliver me to them. That means not even you, Festus. Why not? Well, like we said, because he's a citizen. I appeal to Caesar. You see, Jesus couldn't say that. Jesus couldn't appeal to any higher court. Pilate was it. But Paul, being born a Roman citizen, could do that very thing. And he says, I actually got a trump card. I can stop you from moving me that way by me saying I need to move that way. I appeal to Caesar. And that was the law. As soon as someone said that in a court in that day, proceedings stopped. And that was it. It was over. But you get the idea that Festus tried to figure out if there's a way around it, because he meets with his council right after that. And they probably all said real quickly, no, there's nothing you can do. There's nothing. So he said, okay, you appeal to Caesar? To Caesar you go. To Caesar you go. So it's very intriguing set of events that take place here. Paul, though, is masterful to be able to know what can and cannot be done, but also to be able to take advantage of his opportunity to say, I know the truth, you know the truth, and you're not doing it. And I also like what he says in verse 11, if I'm an offender or committed anything deserving of death, I do not object to dying. This right here is a verse that proves that God is not against capital punishment. There's some that will say that it's wrong, they say it's an evil, it's a sin. They say God would be against it. And yet here we have a man who was an apostle who said, if something's been deserving of my death, then my death must be taken, it must be done. I don't object to it. I won't stand up against it. He's an apostle. Therefore, God wouldn't stand up against it. So, this is a very good verse to show that there are some things that are deserving of one's life if they had committed those things. What are some of those things?
The murder. That's right.
That's right. God goes all the way back to Genesis chapter 9, right? He who sheds man's blood, by man his blood must be shed. So that's something that's deserving of death. That's right.
Mm-hmm. Paul had already written a letter to the Romans. In Romans chapter 13, verse 4, he says, for he is God's minister to you for good. But if you do evil, be afraid, for he does not bear the sword in vain. And he is God's minister. So Paul, you know, was one that supported the government, supported the police, you know, that would take care of the people. And like you said, you know, he was willing to die if he had that support.
All right, and there he says the sword is not bared in vain. And so we all know the sword is meant as an instrument of death, to kill. And so it is to be used to punish the evildoers that have done things deserving of death, as Paul says here. But we also note, too, that Paul still leaves that in the hands of the state. Right? He wouldn't say that this would allow someone to take up personal vengeance or become a vigilante. You've done something deserving of death, so I'm going to now take your life. I'm going to kill you. That power doesn't lie in our hands as individuals. But as you read there, Romans 13, committed to the state, to the government. That's why you want to have a righteous government, because they will legislate that fairly, justly, and rightly, as opposed to a terrorist government or some other kind of form of government that is corrupt. Any other comments about that? You know, there's I've heard of some that had hunted down and killed abortion doctors. And while yes, they have committed murder, it's not in the individual's hands to be a vigilante like that. Paul's saying here to the court, if I've done something deserving of death, then I don't object to the death sentence. It's the court's decision. That's right. The court's decision for that. Tradition tells us that eventually the Roman court would do that for Paul, and he would be executed with the guillotine. But that's tradition, what they state about Paul's death. Any other thoughts about this? All right, so he appealed to Caesar after he'd made his points very strongly. I'm not going to go back to Jerusalem. I will not do that. Festus, when he had conferred with the council, verse 12, answered, "You've appealed to Caesar. To Caesar you shall go." That must have been frustrating for him because he didn't want to be on the wrong foot with the Jews yet, but he could also make the point now, my hands are tied. You can't get mad at me. He did what was legally right as a citizen to appeal to Caesar. So I would have done you a favor. I would have helped you out, but I can't do it. So in that way, he feels he's somewhat relieved of that particular responsibility. So verse 13, after some days, King Agrippa and Bernice came to Caesarea to greet Festus. So, King Agrippa, what is King Agrippa in comparison to Festus? Do you all know some of the differences here?
Mm-hmm. Different titles.
Okay, different titles, yes. Okay, right. So, you remember the Jews had kings of Israel, right? And so they had a king for some time, traditionally. However, when the ruling empire comes in, they don't instantly do away with all of their governmental setup. What they do is they put their person that they want in power at that particular position and say, okay, continue to conduct affairs as they have always been. But they're not really in ultimate control. I mean, really, Festus is above Agrippa. He's the one that's the Roman official. He's the one that's truly in power. But, you know, to kind of placate and to kind of give the impression that things are as they were, you have a king. Now, King Herod Agrippa wasn't even really a Jewish king at all. From what we understand, he's more of an Edomite. But this goes back to what we're saying, is that they let different people get into positions of power, you know, based upon either a bribe or a favor or whatever it may be. We like this guy a lot. And so there's Herod Agrippa. Now, does anyone know about his family? It's a mess. Traditionally not in favor for God's people. His father, Agrippa's father, was the one that killed James, the brother of John, with a sword. And then also tried to kill Peter. But Peter escaped from prison. And then it was his great-grandfather that was the one that did the search and destroy mission against all the children in Bethlehem to try and kill Jesus. And he failed in that.
And was his uncle that killed John the Baptist?
Mm-hmm.
And Bernice was sister.
That's right.
And Drusilla was also
a
sister.
So say, Bernice and Drusilla from Acts 24, they're related as well. So you got Felix here related to some of these, and you know you got Agrippa related to some. They're all. It just goes to show it is a corrupt system. You know, we keep the people in power that we want in power, right? And you look at history again, and they're also in a marriage dead as adulteress. You know, they don't have a right to be married either. She had some other husband that she just forsook, then married King Agrippa. So all kinds of evil and immorality that lies in these people at the top, much like it is today, right? Not too different. It seems like every other couple of months, you know, you hear of something that comes out on one of the politicians or someone in the government, and it just never going to stop. It seems to be the way things are. People in power let that power go to their head, and then they do what they want to do. Any other thoughts about King Agrippa? Okay. I know, you guys knew all that, right? You had all that down. Verse 14, when they had been there many days, Festus laid Paul's case before the king, saying, "There is a certain man left a prisoner by Felix, about whom the chief priests and the elders of the Jews informed me when I was in Jerusalem, asking for a judgment against him. To them I answered, 'It is not the custom of the Romans to deliver any man to destruction before the accused meets the accuser face to face and has opportunity to answer for himself concerning the charge against him.'" So there's some interesting details here that Festus shares. That when he was in Jerusalem, the favor essentially the Jews were asking for was that he be brought to Jerusalem to be tried there, but he knew it was for this man's destruction. Well, that doesn't seem right. You know, you got to meet him face to face, you know. Let's do this the right way. Well, that had already been done. But now Festus wanted to do it with himself. All right, so verse 17, "Therefore, when they had come together without any delay, the next day," see again, they were following him on his coattails, "without any delay," they were not letting this stop. "The next day I sat down on the judgment seat and commanded the man to be brought in." This goes to show how much they hated Paul. I mean, one of the first things that they talk to me about when I get to Jerusalem is Paul. And one of the first things I have to do when I get back to Caesarea is deal with Paul. Because these Jews could not let it go. What does that tell us about hatred and bitterness? And it gets into the soul and you can't think about anything else. It happened to not just one person or two, but a lot of them. They had Paul on their mind. I remember there was this old commercial in the 1980s of an owl that would lick the Tootsie Pop, you know? Remember that? How many licks does it take to get to the bottom of the Tootsie Pop? And the commercial always said, "Whatever it is I think I see becomes a Tootsie Roll to me." And things would pop into that. And it was like he just thought about it all the time. Well, imagine just Paul popping into all these guys' heads. And we can't get him out. We got to deal with him. Obviously, Festus even realized there's a vendetta here. And I don't know what to do. So verse 18, and the reason why I'm sharing this with Agrippa, because Agrippa is Jewish. You know, he wants to, hey, maybe you can help me figure this out. Yeah. Yes.
That's what I was going to say, that he wasn't familiar with Jewish customs and religion, as he knew Agrippa.
Right, you're right. And if he's appealed to Caesar, I'm going to have to, you know, can't send him for no charges. I got to know what I'm going to talk about. You know? So this is a very strategic for Festus as well. He needs to figure this out. Verse 18, "When the accusers stood up, they brought no accusation against him of such things as I supposed, but had some questions against him about their own religion and about a certain Jesus who had died, whom Paul affirmed to be alive." Isn't that something? Yes, yes. And again, that speaks to the truthfulness of the inspiration of Scriptures. Because we know how holy Jesus is. We know that the same Scriptures reveal that He's God in the flesh. But yet, people that didn't have that same understanding and realization can refer to Jesus as this certain Jesus. So it has that sense of reality of what's happened here, what's taking place, and the Holy Spirit hears it and records it, and Luke is inspired to write it. You know, as if Jesus was just kind of a, you know, one of the bunch, you know, just a normal person that died. And so somehow, some way, this is all kind of intertwined. I don't know. I don't get it. I don't understand it, is what he's saying. They have questions against him about their own religion. Now, see, that's why he's scratching his head. You know, this shouldn't even be on the docket. This is a religious dispute. Somehow, some way, Felix allowed it to be on the docket. And somehow, some way, Lysias had him sent over there. Somehow, some way. So all these things took place, and it's not been solved. Well, you can't keep a guy in prison these many years and just say, oh, it was all about religion. It doesn't work that way in the Roman government. There's got to be a law, a civil law violated. So what is it? I got to understand it. So verse 20, and because I was uncertain of such questions, I asked whether he was willing to go to Jerusalem and there be judged concerning these matters. But when Paul appealed to be reserved for the decision of Augustus, I commanded him to be kept till I could send him to Caesar. Well, I think there's a reason why I think he conferred with the council. As, you know, Festus should have known that that's the rule. He had to be trying to figure out how I'm going to get out of this. Oh no, what have I done? Because yeah, if you start sending people up to the head honcho for no reason, well, hey, stuff like this is what got Felix removed. And he almost got executed. He was just lucky to be banished to Gaul. I may not be so lucky. And so, yeah, I think there is some kind of a gulp here. You know, this is a sticky situation. Right. And now it's past the point of no return. He can't throw it out even if he wanted to throw it out. So I have to send Paul, but I also have to send why I'm sending Paul. What's the reason? So he's talking to Agrippa trying to figure this out.
What can I say that will bear him in? So he may not feel real comfortable with the decisions that he's forced to make. As when Bush was handed 9/11, I mean, he had to go into a whole different mode than what he had expected. And Festus, he's been handed something on the platter that he didn't want to have to deal with, but he has to.
Yeah. That's right. He has to deal with it now. But it is intriguing to me how the Bible shares all these details, but it's part of the way God's going to get Paul to Rome. All this is part of the journey. It may not have been the way Paul wanted to go to Rome, right? Or was it in Romans where he mentioned that I'd hope to come to you peaceably or something like that? Romans 1:10. Mom and I were talking about this last night. That's why it came to mind. Yeah, Romans 1:10, making requests, if by some means now at last I may find a way in the will of God to come to you, that I may impart, for I long to see you, that I may impart some spiritual gift so that you may be established. So he would like to go to be with them. He wants it to be done in the will of God. It just that's probably not the way he would have chosen to go there if he could choose. Years and years in prison. That's right. All right, we got a few more minutes. Let's see if we can finish with what he says to Agrippa here. Verse 22. Then Agrippa said to Festus, "I also would like to hear the man myself." "Tomorrow," he said, "you shall hear him." So the next day, when Agrippa and Bernice had come with great pomp, and had entered the auditorium with the commanders and the prominent men of the city, at Festus' command, Paul was brought in. And Festus said, "King Agrippa and all the men who are here present with us, you see this man about whom the whole assembly of the Jews petitioned me, both at Jerusalem and here, crying out that he was not fit to live any longer. But when I found that he had committed nothing deserving of death, and that he himself had appealed to Augustus, I decided to send him. I have nothing certain to write to my Lord concerning him. Therefore I have brought him out before you, and especially before you, King Agrippa, so that after the examination has taken place, I may have something to write. For it seems to me unreasonable to send a prisoner and not specify the charges against him."
Seems to me. It's unreasonable.
Yeah, something like this would never even get close to the Supreme Court. I mean, there are tons of judgments that get pushed up that have legitimate charges, and the Supreme Court can still turn them down. Here, he's got to send Paul to the Supreme Court, but he has no charges to write down.
Probably a little brain.
Mm-hmm. So we can talk more about this on Sunday, about Agrippa and the entrance that he makes and this whole speech. But we've gotten through chapter 25, and that's got to be a record for this class, right? Going through a chapter in one class. All right. Yeah, yeah. All right, y'all. Let's stop there and pick up on Sunday. Oh, wait. That's right, a week from Sunday. Yes, because we have our gospel meeting preacher coming in, and we'll get